Monster Man, Episode 118, Nonafel to Nicodemon. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear, and as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, I'm taking a look at three monsters from the N section of the Fiend Folio, the 1981 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. Before we get started, though, I'd like to thank a new Patreon backer. Yes, this is someone who's gone to patreon.com/monsterman and pledged as little as $2 a month to support the show. And if, like today's patron, you pledge at the $5 or higher level, you'll not only get access to my other podcast, Patron Deities, a show where I talk about the Deities and Demigods book and religion and mythology in games in general, but also you'll get to choose a special episode where I'll spend an extra long episode talking about a monster of your choice. So thank you very much, Mark, for supporting Monster Man on Patreon. I really appreciate it. Also, I'd like to take a quick look at some listener mail. In response to the episode about the Nilbog, I got a really good comment from Sebastian Wakely. Sebastian, once again, displaying his knowledge of the history of D&D in a way that's really handy and informative for me. So let's take a look at this. Sebastian writes, White Dwarf 24 did feature a troll with Nilbogism in its Fiend Factory. It's not as scary as you might think. And he goes on to point out that because Nilbogs do everything backwards, a troll with Nilbogism has a degeneration power, right? So whereas a troll would regenerate hit points, a Nilbog troll would take damage from that. So it says, as a result, it was terrified of the first blow because that would, you know, kick off its degeneration power, but then desperate to be hit to top up its constantly decreasing hit points. So that's a fun idea. And I says, yeah, I was saying a troll with Nilbogism would be really powerful, but of course I wasn't thinking that the troll's already existing regeneration power would actually make it worse. So whenever I say troll with Nilbogism as an example of a really deadly monster, please change troll to ogre in that sentence. And he sorts me out on turning undead in first edition. He says there's no daily limits. It's an encounter thing, right? If you fail a turn, then you can't turn again in that fight. So in that case, I have no idea why, like, there are all these fake undead creatures like the Adherer and the Necrophidius and the Needleman. Oh, I guess you waste, I mean, as he says, at worst it dupes the PC into wasting his action for that round. So you're going to spend one round doing something ineffective. So thanks, Sebastian. That's a good point about the troll. And as you say, it's from a humorous Fiend Factory, which listener Robert Gordon has also suggested that that we should explore in more detail. I'm reluctant. I often don't find gamer humor very funny, but we'll see how it goes. A little voice says, James, you are in the gamer humor genre. You better watch the kind of things you say. Anyway, let's get started with some monsters. First up, we have the Nonafel, also called the Cat of Nine Tails, even though by no definition is it one cat which has nine tails. It is a cat. Tails are important to it, and nine are important to it, but not quite in that sense. Real weird choice of name there, Dean Lockwood and P.S. Barton. Anyway, the Nonafel is basically a large panther, and it has a tail that it whips over its back like a flail. And this is described as like the tail, I think, of a wyvern, which is super weird because if you were to describe the tail attack of a wyvern, you would say it has a scorpion tail. But this is more like a flail that it hits you with, and I guess the end of it is meant to be, like, divided into a number of distinct kind of whips, a bit like a cat of nine tails, so maybe that's where the name comes from. Yeah, it's pretty buff. The tail attack does 2d10 damage, and it's got a good amount of hit points, but what's really interesting about it is that it can divide into basically a pack of similar smaller creatures. And when it does that, the attacks do less damage, and it kind of it divides its hit points among them, which is interesting. So it's one big creature that can split into a pack of nine smaller creatures. And that's a fun idea. I do feel a little bit like this thing is a gimmick too many. Like, I don't know that the flail tail really adds anything to it other than making it look a bit like a displacer beast, I guess. But it's not really important, right? But I do like the, you know, big thing, and then you, like, you genuinely divide its hit points up between the other ones. And it's a good way to do the kind of you know, the weakness of your sort of big predatory monsters, your lions and whatever, or tigers in particular, because tigers are solitary, is that they struggle against getting swarmed by parties of player characters. And so this is a thing that sort of has, you know, a big form for fighting one-on-one, and then a pack form for holding off large numbers of opponents. And that's a fun idea. I wrote here that it has a high gimmick-to-hook ratio, which I think is true. Next up, we have the Norker, created by J.D. Morris. Now, when I look at the Norker, I think it is interesting to note that the other creature for which J.D. Morris is credited is the Flind, because the Flind is basically a variant on the Gnoll, and the Norker is basically a variant on the Hobgoblin. So J.D. Morris's thing seems to have been that they liked to take, you know, creatures that already existed and, like, put a little bit of a twist on them. Indeed, a Flind is basically just kind of a super Gnoll. It's like a Gnoll officer. The Norker, by contrast, is described as being a distant relative of the Hobgoblin, but is not actually very similar to a Hobgoblin. I think their J.D. Morris just may have started with the stat block of a Hobgoblin. So the Norker is based on a Hobgoblin. It has similar stats to a Hobgoblin, but it has armored skin, a D3 bite attack because it has big fangs, and it likes to hit people with a club. And that's kind of it. You know, the distinctive thing about Hobgoblins is that unlike their goblin counterparts, they're not, you know, a bunch of weenies. And unlike orcs, they're not a bunch of undisciplined barbarian brutes, right? Hobgoblins are the militaristic elite of the goblinoids. And that, I mean, that's something that comes from, you know, Tolkien. Clearly the Hobgoblins in AD&D are meant to be the fighting Uruk-hai. Whereas Norkers are just underground, sort of, it's like a troglodyte or an orc or a gnoll or, you know, whatever, but these ones have clubs and fangs and, like, leathery skin, grimlocks and yada yada. So I know that every time, like, these seem to be the exception to the rule. Normally what happens is I complain about how there are too many regular old subterranean humanoid fight guys, and then I find that they have some fun distinctive thing about them. But that has not actually happened so far in the case of the Norker. I have a Norker miniature, actually, which shows their evolution, because the Norker in later editions of D&D is much more kind of ferocious and sort of reptilian looking. It doesn't look very much like the Norker in the Fiendfolio at all. I will say this for the Norker, it's got a swell illustration by Russ Nicholson. I joked at the beginning of the show that I was going to record a little song, you know, that I could just play, because there would be a lot of Fiendfolio entries where it was true, and I would just push a button, and I would go, "This otherwise uninteresting monster is made fun by good Russ Nicholson art," or something like that. But actually, it turned out that there were not a lot of uninteresting monsters in the Fiendfolio. I usually found I had something to say about them. But for the Norker, I'm just going to say that this otherwise uninteresting monster is made fun by good Russ Nicholson art. Ba-dum-bum. Finally, we have the Nicodemon, created by Gary Gygax. And once again, this is something that would go on to be not called a demon in later editions, even after the Batizu and the Tanari were renamed demons and devils, or possibly devils and demons. One or the other, I don't care which. And it's fine with the Nicodemon's predecessor, the Metzodemon. If you want to hear about the background of the Nicodemon, you just have to go listen to the episode about the Metzodemon. But in a comment on that episode, Sebastian Wakely pointed out that the reason that the Metzodemon's 18.00 strength is mentioned is that it explains the creature's otherwise anomalous damage. And that's the same here. It says that Nicodemons have stone giant strength, and that's why basically they do a damage that I guess you wouldn't otherwise expect for such a creature. Me, personally, I don't care. I just want to read the damage stats, but if you're the kind of person that looks at the thing and goes, "Oh, they got that calculation wrong," I guess this is an explanation for why? I don't know. Anyway, the thing about the Nicodemon is it struggles a little bit with the problems of neutrality. And the thing about these guys, the Loths or whatever, is that they're neutral. They're neither chaotic evil like demons or lawful evil like devils. But chaotic evil demons, their motivation is that they want to, you know, spread mayhem. And that is a context-free motivation, right? A demon by itself thinks, all right, where are some people that I can go and just mess up their lives, right? Just spread cruelty and hate and violence and, you know, like find some social norms I can overturn, but in a bad way. And a lawful evil devil is a tyrant. You know, where are some people that I can dominate and oppress where are some people trying to be free that I can enslave? The hierarchy of hell must be enforced, the sinners must be punished, and probably also the good people as well. But the neutral Nicodemon acts to enhance its personal power and security. And so what that means is that the Nicodemon's agenda is not, like the devil or the demons, context-independent. What a Nicodemon is doing very much depends on the scenario that it finds itself in, and is no surprise that this is a creature that comes from a scenario. So, a Nicodemon is a fun monster in a way because it can be an ally with you even against other evil creatures like demons or devils, because it's not ideologically committed to a particular vision of evil, or it is, but its vision of evil is explicitly self-serving. A Nicodemon never laid down its life in the cause of neutral evil, whereas you can imagine demons being so committed to the idea of chaotic evil that they would, you know, take these sort of life-threatening risks just to make things worse for everybody. So a Nicodemon just kind of, it's a fine villain. It's big and buff and bad and it's whatever. It's like the Metademon, but more like calculating and more of a villain than a monster. But it just requires a lot of scaffolding to work. And it doesn't, you know, unlike, say, a vampire, which kind of fulfills the same role, it doesn't have a particular, like, folkloric or literary hook. You know, you first have to explain what a Nicodemon is. But since a Nicodemon isn't much of anything, you know, in terms of its agenda and whatever, it's just like you're going to care about the specific Nicodemon that you're working with or trying to kill, right? So you're going to have, you know, I don't know, Ulgorg the Nicodemon, and he's up to some evil business and you have to stop him. Or even though he's evil, you know, he knows where you can find the blue jewel and you need the blue jewel for your quest. So are you going to make this deal with the devil? But whatever is interesting about the Nicodemon, you're going to have to come up with it from scratch. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Like, what the Nicodemon and the Metademon and, I presume, the whatever, you know, the Arcanoloth and the Yuggoloth and what have you, what they do is they create a space within the hierarchies of evil for people that you can do that with. For, you know, a shady guy you can meet in the bar and slip him a packet full of gold pieces and what have you. And that is a valuable narrative role. I mean, I don't want to downplay that. But at the same time, what it means is that the Nicodemon's not super arresting individually. What the Nicodemon does is create a blank space where you can create a more interesting, ambiguous character for stories that relate to the conflicts of, you know, heaven and hell or whatever, right? Of what would later come to be known as the Blood War. Like, I think most wars have blood in them, and in fact, when you think about the fact that, you know, demons and devils are not mortal creatures, they may not have all that much blood in them. So it could very well be the case that in the Blood War, rather less blood is shed than in most wars. I know it sounded like I was saying Nicodemons are dull, but what Nicodemons really are is they have potential. They're a space within the cosmology where you can do something. And if you cared about the cosmology, which I don't, but if you did, then what they would present would be an opportunity for creativity. And that's nice. Also, they're extremely tough. Oh, there is one interesting thing about the Nicodemon. Well, I mean, there's many interesting things. But one thing that I noticed that was a little unusual about the Nicodemon is Nicodemons have magic resistance. And what this means is that actually they can't effectively use magical items below certain levels. This low-level magic items usually fail. And medium-level magic items, you know, fail often enough that you wouldn't want to try. You don't want to bet your safety on something that's going to fail half the time or whatever. But it doesn't give any rules for this. Presumably because all that matters is the effect, which is that if Nicodemons have magical items, they only have really powerful ones. That's kind of a fun little detail, and I like it. So that's about all the time that we have for today, and that's it for the end section of the Fiend Folio. In our next episode, we're going to do the entirety of the O chapter. We're going to talk about the Ogrelon and the Ozquip on Monster Man, a show about monsters. Because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. Do you have a favorite monster? Do you have something you'd like me to talk about? Find me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or send me an email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so at patreon.com/monsterman, where you'll find lots of extra bonus content and my brand new show, Patron Deities, in which I explore the deities and demigods advanced Dungeons & Dragons book. Check it out. Thanks for listening.